All right, Lori Telepny, it's been so long. I can't thank you enough for coming on the Hope Solo Speaks. This is our seventh and our final World Cup edition. We've been doing this for over a month now. We've had great, great guests come on the show. Some of the soccer elites here in the United States and abroad. And you know, on this last episode, we had a couple guests lined up, right? And we only want the best female guests, right? The only female show that's talking about the Men's World Cup. And so my producer and I, Andrew, were talking and we could have gotten some great players from abroad, but we wanted a World Cup champion.
Hey.
So everybody, please welcome the one and only, one of my favorite teammates I've ever played with, World Cup champion in 2015. Obviously played together in several World Cups, 2007 World Cup, when we got bronze, and we won a gold medal together also in 2008. She's a North Carolina alumni. She's played, you know, in every league from the Chicago Red Stars and the NWSL and the WPS and the WPSL. She's been around the game, obviously former teammate of mine. And now she is the head women's soccer coach at Maryville University in her hometown of St. Louis. So, Lori Telepny, yes. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. This is a pleasure to be on, and I'm still buzzing from the World Cup final, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, that's why we're having you on. We want to talk about, obviously, the incredible World Cup final that was played on Sunday between France and Argentina, a game that I really thought was going to go down in one of the best football matches in history, World Cup matches in history. It started off very slow and boring, in my opinion, but we're going to get into that, right? I can't wait to get your thoughts on the game. But first, man, it's been so long that I just need to know what you've been up to.
I know. Gosh, time flies. It's life is good, though. I'm back in my hometown, back in St. Louis, coaching at Maryville University. We're a D2 school here. So it's been awesome. I love coaching. I've got two little ones. I've got a two-year-old and a four-year-old. So that's life. That keeps me busy enough.
Oh, I can't even imagine. How's your mom and your sister doing?
Everybody's good. Everybody's good. Yeah. Mom is just loves being a grandma. She can't get enough of those kids. And yeah. Family's good. Thanks.
Well, tell everybody hello. And, you know, I always thought I'd make it back to St. Louis one day. It was one of my favorite cities. I really felt welcomed there. It was a cool, spunky, you know, town with all sorts of differing neighborhoods and very cultured, I thought. So I miss it and I haven't made it back.
Those were good days, weren't they? That was fun.
So for all of you who don't know, Lori Telepny and I played on St. Louis Athletica back in the day. I think that was in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was, correct me if I'm wrong, was that part of the WPS at the time? No.
Is that what it was called?
I get all the leagues, but we've played in every league. I
think that sounds right. WPS. Yeah.
But we've been through the ringer because our team folded. We loved St. Louis. You know, you're playing in your hometown. Our team folds.
Yeah. And what a team we had. Oh my gosh. Aya Miyama and Shannon Bach.
We had some of the best players.
Yeah.
Best teammates, not just best players. Like it was a really good team group.
Was one of a kind. Yeah.
Kia and Tina, my center back. I mean, it was the best.
Yeah.
So we were all just happy, you know, professional athletes playing, living our dream, you know, playing professionally, living a comfortable lifestyle in St. Louis, and boom, the rug was just ripped out from under us. And we were told that there's no more financing to our team and that our team is going under and we are folding effective pretty immediately. I think they wanted us to play in like one more game and not get paid. And we were like, why would we play in the game? We don't have health insurance. You know, what's the point? And it's always for the love of the game. Like that's our duty and that's what we had to do. But it broke up this beautiful team of ours. And we all went all over the place. Luckily, you, myself, Tina, Kia, I'm not sure who else, Aya, we all ended up in Atlanta.
That was fun too. That was good.
It was very fun, but it was the worst placed team in the league, I think, at the time.
We didn't win a whole lot, but we had fun.
We did. And I do believe we beat Marta and the LA team.
You have a better memory than me then. It was maybe our one win of the season. We didn't do very well that year. I do remember that.
So I think after that, did the league fold after that? I ended up in West Palm Beach. Crazy.
Yeah. I think we played one more season and then that league folded. And yeah, it's been, Boy, our careers have been a little crazy, huh?
You know, I've been thinking about that. You know, even your national team career, I've been obviously with the show and the World Cup series. I've been reminiscing a lot. I've been able to see former teammates that I haven't seen in a long time and speak to them. And I look at your career and your journey, similar to mine, because we lived a lot of it similarly. You know, ups and downs. We had teams fold. We had to fight for basically our right to play. You ended up playing for the Chicago Red Stars. I think at that point I was in Seattle. But I think the most incredible thing about your career is you were a mainstay. I mean, even in high school and in college, you're on the All-American teams. You're captaining your college team to a title, to an NCAA championship. You're on the U16 youth team, the U19 youth team, the under-21 youth team. You have been brought up in the American soccer system, and you were an all-time great from the onset. And you are, you know, I tell people this all the time that you're my favorite left back defender. I know you love the midfield, but you are by far my favorite defender in the world. But then I look at, you know, so you play in, let me think if I get my timeline right here. You play in the 2007 World Cup, in the midfield. 2007 World Cup was crazy, you know. That's when I got benched. I spoke up. I got kicked off the team. Our team didn't play well. We lost to Brazil. You know, Greg Ryan was on a rampage. It was all crazy in 2007. Then we come back in 2008. New coach with Pierre Sundagi. And we win the Olympic. We win gold.
Yeah.
It's an incredible story.
What a whirlwind. Yeah.
And then suddenly one of the best players on the USA team isn't being called into camp much anymore. When did that start?
So it was a January camp in, I guess, 2009. So we won the Olympics at the end of 2008. We went on our victory tour at the end of 2008. And then our January camp, our traditional January camp in 2009. I think it was just, I was complaining. I wanted to get some Tylenol because I had a headache. And, you know, I guess that set things in motion. And our trainer, I guess, contacted US Soccer and said I had a headache. And, I'm like, I never got hit in the head. Nothing happened. We're in California. I was probably dehydrated. Like, I had a headache, you know? Out of nowhere, out of the blue, I was called into a conference call with the coaching staff and some representatives from US Soccer and told that I wouldn't be able to compete with US Soccer anymore because they were afraid about concussions and about the long-term effects. And I'm like, what happened? And so that was it. And I was sent home and I didn't get called in again until 2014.
So a lot of us were on the sidelines when all of this was happening. We heard the rumors. We didn't know how to approach you, you know, as your teammate. We didn't really know what was being covered up either. We assumed that you had a bunch of head injuries. We assumed that you had been concussed a number of times. We asked questions and tried to stay out of it because we knew it was a really difficult time for you. And, you know, I remember you going to spend hours with, neurologists and brain doctors and all sorts of different doctors to try to prove US Soccer wrong, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Did you have a history of concussions?
I did. I had a history of concussions. I've never had any major concussion. I've never been knocked unconscious. I've never had anything like that. I've had, I get very easily kind of dizzy and just like feeling a little bit lightheaded. And that was kind of my only symptom that I'd ever had. So I went to sought out some other neurologists, some other professionals, the two best neurologists that we could find. Flew across the U.S. and visited with them. They both gave me green lights and shared that information with U.S. Soccer. I think just the liability and, you know, in their defense, I'll say, you know, 10 years ago, it's more than 10 years ago. At that time, I think concussions were such a hot topic and we just didn't know much about them. We didn't know much about the long-term effects and kind of how to diagnose them. And I think that it was just out of fear. That they didn't want to allow me to play anymore. And, you know, and what we found out later on, in 2014, I went to, Jill Ellis contacted me to see what the deal was. Why was I not playing with US soccer? And I went and got some other opinions again. Now that was what, 6 years later. By the time I went back to those neurologists, what they actually found was that I have a vestibular issue. I have, which is sort of an inner ear thing. And sometimes when I get hit in the head a little bit, it kind of knocks my inner ear out of whack. And that makes me feel a little bit uneasy and unsteady. And in fact, many of my concussions, so-called concussions at the time, were probably not concussions, but just a vestibular issue. So I actually was able to like strengthen my vestibular system, which is a very weird thing to do. Very weird PT. But yeah, and I've been feeling great. I mean, I've never had any effects or any long-term issues. And I was just glad to be able to get on the national team again in 2014 and kind of cap off the career with the World Cup win. So it all worked out in the end.
It gives me the chills to think about everything that you went through. You know, as I told listeners, as you know, any fan who watched the games knows that you were one of the best players in the world. Like I told you, my favorite defender, and of course a talented midfielder, but I'm a little stingy and selfish and want you in the back line. But we had been through a lot of ups and downs, and then suddenly you're not on the team anymore, but you were always a mainstay, always kind of an anchored player with lots of versatility, and suddenly you're gone. And that was weird for everybody. I can't even imagine what you went through, but Jill Ellis calls, you get back on the team, training with the team, going into the 2015 World Cup. Not only is that a very difficult, now you've been out of it for a number of years, now you're trying to break back into the team. And you make the World Cup roster, which is just a testament to your skill set and your athleticism and your focus, your mentality. And then you get to cap your career off with winning a World Cup. You gotta tell everybody what it really means to win that World Cup trophy.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's just kind of, it was the perfect ending for me, to be honest. And, you know, I'll go back because let me talk about when, you know, when I was told that I couldn't be on the national team anymore. This is something that I had been doing for my entire life. It was just my path. You know, if you would have asked me, what are you doing, you know, 6 months from now, I could have told you where I would be and what hotel room I would be in, you know, and our lives are just planned for us. All of a sudden, I had a life to live. And to be honest with you, there was a little bit of relief. It was a little bit of like, wow, I can go skiing, right? Because you can't do that when you're on the national team. I can, like, all of a sudden, I kind of had my life to live, and it was a little bit exciting. I can't say that it was all doom and gloom. I loved the game, and I was glad that I was able to continue playing in the professional leagues, even though I wasn't on the US team. But I think, you know, you make lemonade from lemons, and you can choose to look at the negative of situations like that, or you can choose to flip it around and say, hey, look at this opportunity that I have now. And, you know, and look at the positive. And it was a great time. I was able to get into coaching. I was able to have a life outside of soccer and travel and do things. So that was great. But yeah, I mean, to come back onto the national team at, in 2015, to cap my career with the World Cup, it just kind of felt like, you know, things happen for a reason. And I feel like if you just stay the course, that everything's going to work out in the end, even through the ups and downs. I think that just kind of solidified that for me.
Well, I think it's a perfect storytelling moment because we can liken it to Lionel Messi's journey, the ups and the downs and the finality of finally getting a World Cup trophy. So I do want to get your thoughts on that shortly. But before we go there, what have been your World Cup traditions? Now you have two girls, you got a family around you, you're still a head coach. How do you guys enjoy watching this World Cup?
Oh boy. Well, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I remember watching World Cup games with my dad. My dad was like, my mom and dad, neither one played soccer. But once I took an interest in soccer, they took an interest in soccer, and my dad especially. So I remember watching games with my dad, and no real tradition, but just watching games. You know, there's just something about that time of bonding with your dad, especially, I think, for little girls. So that was fun. This year, the World Cup final happened to fall during church. And so I may or may not have had the game on in the back of church watching. And then as soon as the game, church was over, right as the final whistle blew, for regulation. So we loaded the girls in the car, got to a restaurant where they had a TV. And then, I've got pictures of me holding up one of the girls and like my husband holding up the other girl, and we're watching PKs, and they were every second, "Where's Messi? Where's Messi? Where's Messi?" And so we kept having to point out where's Messi. And so they thought it was pretty cool that he wears the number 10 jersey and Mbappe wears the number 10 jersey. So now they're going to wear the number 10 jersey when they play soccer. Yeah. So, and I do have to tell you that my older daughter, Lucy, she after the game, she said, "So how do I want to be the goalie on my soccer team." I said, "Okay, well, yeah, uh-oh, we'll work on that." So, yeah.
I can't believe that. I can't believe you will allow her. I think it's, the toughest position in all of sports is the parent of a goalkeeper.
We'll work on footwork first, okay? And then we'll see how you feel.
You're really going to allow her to be a goalkeeper. That's incredible. And I love that you know how important footwork is.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm guessing your girl's favorite player is Messi, but throughout the tournament, there have been a lot of fantastic players, fantastic teams. In fact, you know, one of the best upsets was against Argentina with the opening game against Saudi Arabia. So there's been really inspirational play, really great team play, and obviously fantastic star power. So who is your favorite team throughout this tournament? Who did you predict to win it? And who is your star player, your favorite player?
Well, so I do have to admit that I picked Belgium, which didn't go so well for me. I loved watching Brazil. I just think the attacking oriented soccer is just so fun to watch. And they didn't sit back. They went for it. Even when they were up, you know, they weren't just sitting back protecting the lead. They were going to score more goals, and that was fun to watch. That was fun. I don't know if I have a favorite player really. I just think, yeah, there were a lot of star players, a lot of really big moments. But I think one of the fun things about this World Cup for me was how good teams were on the counterattack. Like, you know, for so long we were talking about tiki taka, pass, mm-hmm. you know, and this World Cup I think proved that, you know, possession there's a purpose to possession, but if you're just possessing to connect 3,000 passes, you don't win the game. And so I think the teams who went after it and set numbers forward and played an attacking style of soccer, that was fun.
And that's a good point. You know, coming from obviously a head coach, you've been a coach now for a very long time. How long have you been the head coach?
I've been the head coach now for 6 years, but I've been at Maryville now for 11 years.
Okay. So I love speaking to coaches, especially, you know, as a player and a former teammate, your guys' opinions of the game. And a lot of my friends are coaches or scouts. They're in the game. And so I love hearing their opinions because they come at it from more of a coaching view now, point of view, and it's evolved so much. So the fact that you talk about the counterattack, you're so right. Everybody used to want to be the Brazils of the world and the Spanish teams of the world who tiki-tac football, pass. And then you look at the percentage of, you know, who has the ball the most of, help me out here.
Right. Well, the possession.
The percentage of possession.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always tell the entire mm-hmm. story or the complete story. And I think when you have a team who's willing to send numbers forward, but at speed, like you said, and still have quality passing and connecting the ball, you have to have a different type of team. You have to be really fit mm-hmm. because when you break at speed, but then you still have to come back. And I think that's the difference is the amount of conditioning that I've seen in this World Cup is unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and look at Morocco, the way that they were successful was on the counter, and they had, when they went and they believed and they sent numbers forward. And like you said, yeah, you have to connect the passes and you have to, you know, have the star player who can break somebody down 1v1. But yeah, that athleticism and the physicality of the game, I think was really fun.
I'd have to agree that I think that's the best point made thus far on the show in terms of why the World Cup was so entertaining. It was that fast-paced football. It was team play. It was attacking with numbers. A team like Morocco who defended in numbers. I have the chills thinking about it. I mean, Yeah, some of these teams just played with so much heart and left it all out on the field.
Yeah, and even though they were, you know, they didn't have any possession, but you're watching on the edge of your seat because you knew how quickly the game could switch. And that, yeah, I hope that that's the direction we continue to go, because I think for so long it's kind of been more possession, and I'll, you know, I say that too, you know, when I'm coaching, we need to possess more. And it's like, no, we need to go score goals.
That's score when you can. I mean, it used to be the style of get services into the box, but now I think you have to mix all styles. You know, there were still a ton of goals off of set pieces, off of corners, not as many as the previous tournament, by the way, which it usually goes up every year. So I'm actually surprised that there were less goals on set pieces and corner kicks than any other World Cup. But still plenty of goals to be seen off the head and service into the box.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it was a fun tournament.
It's really that mix of styles. Now, what do you think about the American team? Where are we, what kind of style are we missing to implement? What do we need to be a top 10 contender?
Oh man. Well, first of all, I was really pleased with the way that the U.S. team performed. You know, I think, like we were talking about, you know, we weren't sitting back, we weren't playing scared. We did not bunker. We did not, you know, we went after games, and even that final, the game against the Netherlands, you know, we created chances. You just need a little bit more quality in those moments. And I think we're still sort of lacking the superstar. I think we're trying to make Pulisic the superstar. I don't think he's the superstar yet. But he's young and the team is young, and I think we'll get there. I think there's a lot of positive takeaways, and I'm excited to see the team in 4 years, because I really think that we're on a good path.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I love that you say that perhaps Pulisic is not the star power, because he's a fantastic teammate, but it's almost like you take every other team. You take the Neymars of the world in Brazil, the Mbappes of France, you know, and obviously Messi at Argentina. And now it's a different level of star power. These players can put the game on their back and just change the momentum of a game, like we saw happen in yesterday's final,
right?
So I'd have to agree with you. You know, Pulisic, he did great. He worked his butt off, but I do think we're still going to need some star power in terms of scoring power 4 years from now.
Yeah. Yep. We'll see how things develop.
All right. Well, let's get into it. I have very complicated thoughts on Lionel Messi. I'd like to get into that with you, but let's talk about the final, because it was, in my opinion, absolutely fantastic. I was so bored, though, in the first half. I couldn't believe that. I thought it was going to be.
Where was France?
Where was France?
My goodness.
Where was the midfield? They couldn't connect passes.
They were just on their heels. I feel like they weren't. I mean, it was just, it was kind of scared. It looked kind of timid and scared. But what a performance by Argentina in the first half on the flip side. My goodness. Yeah.
Well, I just didn't see it going down that way, where it was going to be a slaughtering. And you even heard the commentators. I was uncomfortable with how much they were referencing that it was a slaughter. And, and you know, I felt like it was a little disrespectful to France. And I still knew they have Mbappe, anything can happen. But I was sitting there kind of bored in a World Cup final in that first half.
Yeah.
Obviously, anything can happen. That's what we talked about. France, I haven't seen France have two poor performances in a row. And I still think it was a poor performance, even though France came back to tie it up and take it into extra time and penalties. So it went 1-0 in the 23rd minute. And it was really Di Maria who took players on in the box and earned that penalty.
It was fantastic. I mean, he was man of the match in the first half. They couldn't stop him. It was really one of those inspirational, like, you know, inspirational stories. I was so happy to see him start. And then he was awesome.
Then, so he earns the penalty for the first goal for Argentina in the 23rd minute. And then they score again going into half. And that was like a dagger to the heart for France fans and for the team. And Argentina scores right before half, around the 36th minute. And it was a beautiful goal. Golden touches all over the field. Lionel Messi with this outside of the foot spin touch for a through ball. I mean, it was passing play. It was everything these soccer purists want to see, right?
Yes.
And then in comes Di Maria for the finish. And you could see the joy and the passion on his face. That is why I think I have this tough relationship and complicated thoughts when it comes to Lionel Messi, because I want to see players wear that passion on their sleeve, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what Di Maria was for me in that final. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and for all the talk about Messi, this being Messi's last World Cup, it's Di Maria's too, you know? And I don't know if he's announced that or not, but I think with his age, we can assume that. And you know, he doesn't really get the attention or nobody's talking about him, but it was great to see him have such a great performance in the first half. Yeah.
I'll forever have that memory etched in my mind when he scored that goal.
Yeah.
I think it should go down as one of the best celebrations in soccer because it's not planned. You know, he's just pure joy for the game and he's crying. You know,
I do think that in this World Cup that Messi showed a little bit more personality. I think in that, even in the Netherlands game, while it got a little bit out of control, a little bit out of hand, but I was like, the world should be scared now because, you know, he's angry and the team was showing some grit and some emotion. And I think that's sort of what's been lacking from the Argentina side going into this World Cup. So I do think that he showed a little bit more just of himself in this World Cup. I agree.
Goodness. He did. I mean, he ran more than I've ever seen him run. He was getting back on defense. He wanted the ball. You know, towards the end of this game, though, the final versus France, when they go up 2-0 at halftime, and then Mbappe, I mean, honestly, France didn't play well, but Mbappe put the game on his shoulders. And this is where I compare. We always talk about Lionel Messi being the greatest. And I don't want to take away his accolades and how incredible he is. I mean, there's no denying his ability on the ball. But for me, I've always wanted to see emotion, leadership from him. And I want to see him step up in those big moments. Well, his team at the end of the game, it was a nail biter and their backs were against the wall. And Mbappe was taking over the game. And that's what I wanted to see from Messi, because in the final minutes, of regulation and even in extra time, Messi disappeared. He didn't get the ball. He came deep into the midfield. He didn't do much.
No.
And that's what I kept, you know, I have a lot of debates with hardcore Argentina fans, and we were on a text string during the final and I'm like, where is he?
He wasn't in the picture because he was walking, you know, back by the center backs and he wasn't. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, that's the tough part about having the superstar, right? It's like they're different.
They are different. And talk about different. You know, this is, go back to Di Maria. He couldn't catch his breath at the end of the match. You know, Argentina wins at the end of the penalties. He's stained with tears. And then they show Messi and he's always just like kind of stoic and smiling. Oh, my computer's not charging. Sorry. He's always stoic and just kind of standing there smiling. And I don't know why I never feel the emotion on Lionel Messi. Like, I just don't feel the emotion. It's like he's a robot sometimes to me.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it like because he's grown up in this environment of being so watched all the time that he, like, is he emotional behind closed doors, but he doesn't show it on the field or something? I don't know. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he not even like didn't even shed a tear. I mean, and he's excited. He was happy at the end of the game, but it was kind of this, he was very, tempered in how much emotion he wanted to show the world, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Maybe he just always knows the camera is on him.
Yeah.
Doesn't know how to act, but it did look like the game was going to slip away from Argentina and from Lionel Messi. But in the end, he won the prize that has always eluded him, the World Cup trophy. And he got that sunset, you know, he got to ride off into the sunset, that glorifying story that he had always wanted. It did happen for him. It doesn't happen for all of us. That's why I wanted you on to explain to the world how much winning a World Cup really means. Because you can go decades pushing and trying. And, you know, as we heard your story, we heard the ups and the downs. And it's very hard to get there. You got to overcome injuries. You got to overcome coaching changes and roster changes. And at the end, at 35 years old, he finally did it. And that's why I wanted you on, because you have been through it. Yeah. And you've been back, and here Lionel Messi is, he's back.
It is. It's a crazy, but like, you know, name one person who had the straight path, right? Like, I think that's what so few people, recognize about anybody's journey is that, you know, you just see them raise the trophy at the end. And, you know, the journeys are filled with ups and downs, and you, just when you think you're knocked out, you're able, you know, like it's not an easy path for anybody. And I think young kids need to know that, like, you're going to be on the brink of quitting. You're going to be on the brink of not playing, and you're going to keep going, you know, and that's the journey. That's the story. And it doesn't happen easily for anybody, nobody. I mean, you yourself, I mean, name anybody who gets to the top, who hasn't been knocked down a lot. And it's just, you just have to keep getting back up, and you can't fall for this trap of seeing people only at their best, because everybody falls.
Amen. You know, I think sometimes we forget that we only want to hear the great stories, you know. Messi's been through his own personal struggles on and off the field as well. And obviously, yeah, we know Ronaldo has. I think right now Mbappe, he's got it going good. And yeah, let's talk about those final minutes, or before it went into extra time, final minutes of regulation. It was Mbappe who stepped up for an 80th minute penalty. He stroked that in, by the way, just nerves. Just, I know. Unbelievable.
Confidence just coming from his pores. It was incredible.
He did not pull a Harry Kane. Sorry, English fans.
Right.
And then immediately following, he had this fierce volley. I mean, it could have been goal of the tournament. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So he gets two goals in the final minutes and France, they smelled blood going into extra time. So going into extra time, who doesn't want a 3-3 final going into penalties? So it's 2-2 regulation, 3-3. So each team scores in extra time, which is phenomenal. And Mbappe becomes the first player, modern day male player, to score a hat trick in a World Cup final, which is incredible. And then now we have the sweet cruelty of penalties.
Yes.
What were your thoughts when it went to penalties?
Oh, I just wanted him to keep playing. And like, a World Cup final should not be decided on penalties. And especially the way that both teams were playing at the end of that overtime, they could have kept going. You just, you know, it is, penalties are exciting. I'm sure that it was, you know, drew a lot of fans and a lot of excitement, but, you know, just the soccer purist, and he doesn't want to see games like that decided on penalties. So yeah, it was kind of, you know, bittersweet. I guess the game has to end somehow, but I wish there was a better way.
Well, I just hated it too. I absolutely hated it because, yeah, I thought the French goalkeeper, Lloris, was the best goalkeeper of the tournament. And now he's going up in penalties. He doesn't make a save. And Argentina's goalkeeper, who has a style that I don't appreciate, I don't like, he ends up, you know, making a couple of saves and getting goalkeeper of the tournament. And I don't think it was indicative of his play the entire tournament, but he became a hero in that moment during the penalty kick situation. And I don't usually think whoever gets the golden glove issued by FIFA, I usually really agree with. And it doesn't usually always go to only the goalkeeper who wins the World Cup trophy. So when this happened, I was really heartbroken for Lloris, goalkeeper for France. And Emiliano Martinez won it for Argentina. And I thought he was disgraceful, his behavior, what he did with, I don't know if you saw it, but, you know, he's given this honorable trophy, the Golden Glove, which represents best goalkeeper in the entire tournament. And I don't know what he was doing. I don't even think it was a lapse in a moment of judgment, because I think he always makes those judgments.
Yeah.
He's a personality. He's always trying to be a personality, but I was really disappointed in that.
It was kind of it felt a little bit of a slap in the face to the award and just to what it means. Yeah. But not a good look for him, I think.
I thought the best goal was Di Maria's goal.
Yeah.
I think that's the goal of the tournament. I think the best upset was Saudi Arabia versus Argentina. A lot of people would think Morocco and their continued into the tournament.
Yeah, I could go either way with that. I mean, I don't know. I think Saudi Arabia early in the tournament to upset Argentina. I mean, I think that has to be the upset of the tournament.
I think so too. I mean, they beat the World Cup champs. That's even a better story now.
Yeah, exactly.
And then FIFA gave the best player of the tournament to, you know who, right? Of
course. Messi.
Of course. So the stories that I think the media wanted, that the fans wanted, Lionel Messi sailing into a sunset, not only winning a World Cup, but being best player of the tournament. It's hard to find a convincing case that this truly wasn't the best World Cup that I've seen. Superstar cast, superstar performances, high stakes, drama. Not to mention it was in, it was being hosted by Qatar.
Yeah.
And everything that went into that with the treatment of migrant workers and gay rights. At the end, you know, we didn't see anybody really stand up politically. I thought we'd see a player or two or a team do something politically to stand up for gay rights and the treatment of the migrant workers. But at the very end, I think FIFA presents this tournament and I think Qatar presents this tournament as a huge triumph. And I can't disagree other than all the controversies and losing lives, you know, in the building of these stadiums. But the on-field play, the beautiful, magnificent stadiums, everything kind of went off without a hitch and nobody expected that.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. I mean, it was, what a tournament. I mean, even outside of the final, even the group stage, I mean, nobody gets out of the group stage unscathed, without at least a tie on their record. I mean, that's unique. But yeah, just, I mean, the number of upsets, but then like you said, and team performances, but then like you said, the star performances too, like it had everything. And then to end with the final that we just talked about, you know, I think it was fun. It was fun. And you know what? It makes me excited for 9 months from now when the women get to put on a show for the world.
Being hosted in both Australia and New Zealand.
Yes.
I think we had a couple World Cups and Olympics, always in China.
Yes. Where were we always?
And then in Canada. And then in Canada. Goodness.
Why couldn't ours be in New Zealand? Come on.
Not just in Canada, but on turf in Canada, mind you.
Yeah. We didn't get the luck of the draw on some of ours.
But we found a way to win. And at the end, that's all that matters.
Yep.
So France was my team. Well, Portugal was actually my team, but I'm a huge fan of France. And I'm a huge fan of Karim Benzema, who I still don't understand how you get injured that close to the World Cup. It makes me feel like he was overtrained. You shouldn't be pulling or tearing a muscle that close to the tournament. So it just makes me have some questions. That would have most likely been his last chance to play in a World Cup. And my heart is a little broken for Karim Benzema. France also played without Paul Pogba and Kanté. So I think 4 years from now, they're going to be okay. And I think they'll go out the title again. You know, we talked about France having two poor matches in a row, but still star power stood up, to make things happen. But Dembele was nowhere to be found in the game. And Griezmann, I thought Griezmann had a fantastic tournament as a midfielder the entire tournament.
Yeah.
And then something happened to France's midfield.
Well, that's, you know, that's, it's just too many people had a poor performance in the final. And they had a couple players who played well, but you can't win a game when you've got, you know, four, five, six players who just have a bad game. You know, you got to expect that somebody in your team, one or two players are going to have a bad game. Anytime you step on the field, you know, everybody's not going to be firing 100%, but you can't have that many players have bad performances on the same day. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't. And one of the heartwarming stories had to do with power forward for Argentina, Sergio Aguero, of course, who was not on the World Cup squad due to heart problems. But there were some touching images after the game where he got to go with his teammates and celebrate. And you could tell that it meant the world to him. But at the same time, when you're not on the World Cup team, it still hurts. Even if your team loves you and brings you down to the pitch and celebrates with you, it's not in the record books.
No. And you're there as a spectator as much as you want to, you know, you're not a player, and that hurts, but I'm glad that he was able. I mean, I think that's a good, I don't know. It's a feel good story. It also makes you happy for him that he was able to kind of overcome those feelings and celebrate and be a part of the team.
It's been 1986 since Argentina won a World Cup, and that was when Maradona played and his spectacular team. Where do we rate Diego Maradona, Pele, Lionel Messi?
Oh my!
Is he the best that I've ever played?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think history is going to tell the story. I don't know. I feel like we're too soon to speak on that yet.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because people have been talking about Lionel Messi for decades being the best player ever. It's been a debate that's been going on throughout our entire generation. You know me, where I stand. Everybody knows where I stand with Lionel Messi. I do not discount his incredible skill and talent, and absolutely is one of the best. But I like to be inspired. And for me, whether it's be a teammate that I'm inspired by with the intensity and the emotion on the field, or watching somebody play, you still want to feel that inspiration. You want to feel it through the television set. And when I think back to Diego Maradona, ooh, that guy was an entertainer. He was silly. He had been through, like you said, ups and downs in life and hardships. So for me, my heart is still pulling towards Diego Maradona.
Yeah. But do you feel like you say that because he was like, his personality was different? I mean, I think Messi just is a quieter personality. But you know, like, and some of that shows on the field too, but like, you can't, take away from what he does in the field because he isn't the person who lights up a room when he walks in, you know?
Well, that's a really good point. And I actually don't tend to like showboats and people with these big personalities, you know, who are always trying to talk in the locker room and dance. And I mean, you know, you were right by me in the locker room.
Right.
I'm not up there dancing. I'm trying to get my mind right. And I know people need to let loose. And that's exactly what Diego Maradona seemed to do on the field, was let loose. But he just beat to his own drum. But when he went and played, he will dribble past anybody. He was physical. He played with that passion. So it wasn't as much a silly personality, I guess, as much as what he showed on the field when it was do or die, and he wanted to beat anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's funny, because I really do like a little bit. I'm a little bit more introverted. You know that about me. So for me, inspiration can come in so many different ways. You know, I was inspired by your play all the time, just because you played for the team. You were a very selfless player. You put yourself in the right positions, even if it wasn't your job to do. You could see something break down and you got there. You would go in hard for a tackle. You would win air balls. You put your body on the line. You scored goals too. You ran the field. So you can be inspired. And it's not like you had this huge personality in the locker room, but you were a leader in your own right. And so for me, that's where inspiration comes from.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel you.
Oh, goodness. All right. Lori Kolupny, thank you so much for coming on Hope Solo Speaks. It's been a pleasure to speak about, you know, football with you. Before I let you go, I want to know maybe the biggest thing that you have learned in your coaching career, something that has either changed your opinion or changed you or how you approach things. And I also want to know your favorite World Cup memory.
Ooh, my goodness. Okay, I would say coaching, boy, it changes you a lot. I mean, first of all, that good players don't like playing soccer and coaching soccer, completely different animals. I was not a good coach when I first started. It takes a while. And you know, you start with this love of the game and knowledge of the game, but then teaching that to somebody else is completely different. But I think the thing that's really changed me over the years of coaching is just, you know, you're constantly having to adapt to the climate of kids and coaching and how to get to them. And, you know, one of the great things about being a coach, I think, is that you're sort of a mentor more, you know, you're coaching soccer, but you're also there's this other piece to you and developing culture and developing leadership and developing that stuff. I think that has changed me as a person, and changed me as a coach through the years of just, you know, when I was a player, I'm this hard-nosed, you give it your all or don't be on my team. You know, like, it's all or nothing, right?
Like, you were very blue collar at St. Louis.
very blue collar, right? And like, if you're not going to work hard, then I'm just done with you as a player. I mean, that's the way I was, right or wrong. It just, if you weren't going to work hard, I didn't want to have anything to do with you. As a coach, it's different, right? Like you have to get that out of players, and it's not just pushing people to the side because they're not this, that, or the other. But understanding people and pushing the right buttons to get what you need out of them. I think that's been really like life-changing for me, and just kind of like, I don't know, opened my eyes to a whole different side of things. Favorite World Cup memory. Oh man. Gosh, I have to go back. I don't know. I mean, I think like the Carly's goal from midfield. I mean, I'm on the sideline, but it was kind of like, we're going to win the World Cup. Like that was the moment I was like, we're going to win. Oh my God. Like, what are like, so I think that is like just a memory that sticks out to me. I kind of remember like where I was standing and who I was with. And cause I was like, what?
It's happening.
This thing. Like, really yeah, that was the moment for me.
I remember going into the locker room at halftime, Carly, Carly and I embraced, she ran all the way back. I never celebrate goals. She came all the way back. We embraced. Because I think you're right. In that moment, we were like, we're doing this. Like, it's happening. This is real. This is really happening. So we go into the locker room at halftime and nobody really knew what to say to us, the coaching staff. Because, and you got to find something to say because we still, you know, it's Japan. They can come back. We still have 45 minutes. But we all were feeling pretty confident in the locker room at halftime.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right. I could talk to you forever. I have so many questions for you, you know, more about what you've learned from your players. I think it's got to be incredibly difficult to coach the younger generations. And I'm sure as much as you're teaching them, you're learning from them as well. And it's making you, I assume, become a better mom, daughter, you know, wife, everything, friend. So I have a lot to learn from you because you've been in it and you've been teaching these kids. And I know that the most important coaches to me were hard asses. Yes, they made me better on the field, but they also made me a better person off the field. And those were the coaches that I remember. And I'm certain that you're playing a very instrumental part in the lives of many young women.
So well, I appreciate that. It's it's the best job in the world, getting to hang out with kids and they are still kids. So.
I said college women. Kids, I right? said young so women. Kids.
Yeah, no, it is awesome, and I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, Lori Klepny, very great to see you. Can I still call you Lori Klepny?
Oh yeah.
Can I still call you Chupa?
Chupes from back in the day. Yes,
it's really hard not to call you Chupes.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Hope.
Hope Solo Sphinx is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.